Welcome to Peak Mind. I'm your host, Michael Trainer, and I am extremely excited for this week's episode with the one and only Snow Raven. Snow Raven is from a tiny village in the northernmost part of Arctic Siberia. She's an indigenous woman, and she is incredibly powerful. We talk about the true roots of shamanism. We talk about the various levels of power. She sings an incredibly resonant song. She mimics and speaks with the spirit of the animals, as well as plays the mouth harp. You will get a taste for her incredible music as well as her profound insights. I cannot wait. The feedback I've been getting on the early release of the YouTube, which please, if you have not yet gone to the YouTube, please go subscribe, has been phenomenal. Thousands and thousands of engagements. But before we get into it, I just want to take a quick moment to acknowledge our partners. The first is Momentum. MomentumShake.com. Momentum is my go-to complete longevity supplement. It has everything from NAD Plus to collagen, omega-3s, sun fiber, cordyceps, all my essential minerals, lion's mane, and the fruiting body of the lion's mane for cognitive enhancement, hyaluronic acid, taurine, vitamins D3 and K2. It has it all and at the highest quality. I absolutely love Momentum. I basically drink it every day with my wild blueberries. It tastes delicious and it's got everything you need. Check them out, MomentumShake.com. This episode is also brought to you by Upgraded Formulas. Upgraded Formulas is my go-to resource for all things minerals. I did a hair test for them, realized I had heavy metal exposure, and subsequently have been working with them on getting my minerals optimized for detoxification, as well as to get my cellular health and everything firing at the highest level. I'm a huge fan of their magnesium. My deep sleep has gotten way better. I take their upgraded memory, their upgraded charge. I highly recommend you check them out. Head over to upgradedformulas.com and you can use PEAK for 15% off your order. And with that, and without further ado, it's my great pleasure to introduce Snow Raven.
Yeah. city there. Manna musta wad parang urang kaitare. Baraların, ürdükü ara yıllarım ortadaydım içlere. Algıstan, arangatçılan, karıstan, rastan. Dom, dom, domido.
Welcome to Peak Mind. I'm your host, Michael Trainer, and I have the very distinct honor to be sitting with Snow Raven. Snow Raven, it's an honor to meet you.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Yes. So we opened with an incredible song. And in doing my research, I learned not only from a very incredible place, but you started to learn to commune with the birds and with nature at a very early age. Can you share a little bit about where you're from and how you came into communing with spirit?
My name is Swar, which means snow raven in English. So Swar in Sakha language. And I'm an indigenous Sakha from Arctic Siberia. And that place is so remote and very beautiful, powerful, with extreme weather conditions. And you know, the winters can go to minus 96 Fahrenheit.
Wow.
72 Celsius.
It's probably the coldest place in the world.
Coldest inhabited area in the world. That was actually officially recognized as the coldest inhabited area.
Yeah.
And then on the contrary, summers can go to 100 above. So it's really extreme weather conditions. And just imagine living in that environment made my people to face constantly fear, fear of death. And then when you constantly out of comfort zone, you grow and then you are aware of your environment and you're close to nature. So you live by the law of nature. And I grew up I was born and grew up in a small village with 300 people.
Wow.
And my grandfather, his generations were still living in open space called Alas. And imagine like having deep, deep, deep taiga, deep forest, and then there's a little openness with lake in it. And family, Sakha family will find that place and settle their houses, winter and summer houses. The reason it's open space because there is a permafrost all over Arctic Siberia. And when it's closer to the surface of the ground, trees cannot grow there. So they have this open space. And my grandfather was living in Alas. No electricity, imagine.
Wow.
The source of heating was a fireplace called Kömülük, and also cows. Cattle was a provider of heating because they were living in one house divided by one wall, and the cow would provide a body heat.
Yeah.
And so his generation didn't have civilization at all. And imagine surviving in minus 96. I can't even comprehend with my mind how it could be. And he actually brought an electricity to my village.
Wow.
So I was born in a village with electricity, and he built with people, with men of the community, school, kindergarten, place where everybody come together and sing, sport building. So little piece by piece, the infrastructure was built. So I was born in 1989, right before Soviet Union collapsed. You know, Arctic Siberia is a part of Russia. And so we had this two waves coming to us, to our culture. And the first wave was 17th century. Mm-hmm. And when Russians discovered Sakha people, they changed our names. They baptized some of the Sakha people. Then in 1930, a lot of shamans were put in the jail and burned their drums and regalias. But culture stayed, survived through carrying traditions through songs and storytelling. And also shamans were secretly healing people. Hmm. So it just stayed in deep in the bottom of the heart, and they just manifested these days in a very beautiful modern way. Like a lot of modern shamans coming from the small villages. So I was born in that environment, and I left my nest when I was 23. Hmm. And all of these years living closer to nature and hearing that sound of nature, every single, you know, sounds of voices of birds. I would say the cuckoo bird, it's a sign of spring. So when we hear that, we say, oh, spring started. Wow. Or there's an elie, which is a brown kite, and then you can hear him from above. This bird flies so high. It's in the hawk family. So it does sound, and we recognize, oh, our summer started. So yeah, and then those sounds, they are, you can hear the echoes or the delay or reverb of those sounds, because it's so quiet.
Yeah.
Where I grew up, just so silent and so quiet that your hearing is so sharp. Because you, when I came here to the United States, in the big cities, there are a lot of noises. And then these noises are, they're kind of chaotic. Mm. And that's why my ears, what I've noticed, they just cancel. Mm-hmm. Cancel the white noise. And therefore, it becomes less sharp. Hmm. So that's what I miss from my homeland, and I truly, you know, just go back to my home through my dreams and just realize, wow, how it is beautiful to be, to grow up there, to be a child, and to have this intimacy with nature. Hmm. Through the sound. So I truly am honored to be born, even in that harsh conditions. I don't know how I survived. But I would say there's no bad weather, there's bad clothing.
Well said. Well, first of all, I'd be remiss if I didn't honor you for your courage, and also honor your people for their resilience. Mm-hmm. What an incredible fortitude to be able to exist at those extremes, you know? And what I deeply love of what you just shared is this notion of the silence. Mm-hmm. And the space that lives in the silence, you know? I unfortunately grew up in a city. So I had a very opposite experience. I grew up in the city of Chicago, which is the third largest city in the US. Yet my spirit has always deeply resonated with nature. I was always climbing trees, you know, even playing soccer, I would be mesmerized by the grass. And I did a vision fast, where I went to, there's a place in California I think you would love next time you visit. It's the one part of the highway. So the US built from Mexico to Canada the one highway, which is quite beautiful, mm-hmm. Up the entire coast, except there's one part of the coast that is too rugged. So they couldn't build the highway. Yeah. And I love it because it's where nature just was like, no. But you can backpack in. And so I backpacked in, and I spent a week there just vision fast, just listening to the waves morning and night.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a small, very small taste of what you share, in that I realized 3-4 days in, my ears were more expansive.
Right.
I could hear the insects even in a different way. And I started to tune into a different level of listening, you know, and a sensory perception that was beyond my traditional orientation. I not just heard things, but I received messages in different ways. And so it was a very small taste, but I can only imagine the level of perception that you would have attuning in a place like that. You know, like your instrument must be very beautifully tuned to have the resilience and also that silence in which to birth this way of listening. And it's clear in the way that you express yourself that you've deeply listened to the natural world around you. And I honor that. I want to ask you, you know, many say that shamanism was actually born mm-hmm. in the area from which you come. That actually the original shamans were really, shamanism was birthed in Siberia. And given you're from Arctic Siberia and this place, and also, as I understand it, have been trained in this lineage, can you share a little bit about your home place as the birthplace, arguably, of shamanism?
So thank you for asking this question. It's just when I talk about shamanism, it could take me hours.
Please.
But I would like to be a little bit shorter here.
Okay.
Yeah. To describe shamanism, there are no words, because it's an experience. It's a human experience in the mystery. So the word shaman or saman in Tungus language means a person who knows. And Tungus culture, it's a reindeer herders, nomadic people who live in tundra in Arctic Circle. And we do have over 30 different tribes in entire Arctic Siberia. So Saha people, Tungus people, or Evenk, right? So those people are all from the same area. And I grew up surrounded by that culture. And so the root of shamanism as a term, it comes from Tungus language. And it was internationally recognized as as a word that was born there, but as a phenomena. I have a notion that it exists around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Since first human being recognized that human nature and cosmos, the universe, it's all interconnected. Shaman is the person who can travel between the worlds, we believe, between the realms. And just imagine our eyes cannot see everything, just small spectrum of light. And our ears cannot hear everything. It's just a small range of, you know, decibels. And I had an honor to meet one of the powerful shamans, Tungus shaman. His name is Save, and he's 12 sky shaman. And I can explain to you what does it mean, 12 sky. So we do see the world as a three levels, lower, middle, and higher. Lower world is a realm of fear. It's very survival, primal energy. And then the middle world is taptal, the realm of love. The higher, the upper world is the realm of gratitude, mahtal. And what is interesting that the middle world has energies of both upper and the lower. Look at it as pain and pleasure, or black and white, right or wrong, this duality. But the middle world has kind of sort of dancing of those two energies. And then we as humans, we live in the middle world, we believe.
Yes.
So in all the, tangible world, animals, insects also are here. And that's why we have both energies coming in and out constantly. And denying the lower world, pushing it away or running away from it, it's not a, it's not, how to say, the better way to include it and see it as a part of the cycle of life. It's like a death and birth. And shamanism is a phenomena that also, has a lot of interesting forms, like, or, it exists around the world, as I mentioned. Yeah. And some of the shamanic cultures, they have plant medicine. And in Saha shamanism or Yunnan, we do not have any plant medicine. It happens by nature. The future shaman experiences enormous pain and suffering. We call that etteni. It's a shamanic disease. And it starts when a kid around 3-4 years old. And they can predict things. They can do some unusual, unexplainable things. And there are some stories that there was a kid who cut his head and show it to mother. And mother was just, shocked.
Wow.
Or some kids can do their clones, their twins, and surprise their parents. Or in a modern time, there was a powerful shaman girl. She predicted her sister. She was 4 years old, and her mother just conceived a baby a night ago, and she could see, "Mommy, you have my little astral Whoa. Twin in you. And she's going to be a girl. Her name is Tuyara. She's going to be born at exactly the same time, day of the week that I was born." Mm-hmm. And it happened exactly as she predicted. So the kids who are future shamans, who have the skills, they just play around. And then what happens, like every single 7 years, some changes happen. And around teenager time, they experience disease. So they might have some mental breakthroughs. So I would describe it using Western terminology, but we don't diagnose people like that in my culture. So the symptoms are very, very close to seizure, epilepsy, schizophrenia, losing consciousness, or some non-diagnosed pain in the physical body. The reason we believe that happens is that the energy enters the physical body when the body is not ready to hold that energy. It just reacts. And then all of a sudden, all of the symptoms happens. Imagine our body as a device, and when you plug into high voltage, it's more, explode, or some reaction might happen. So around that age, this etteni process happens, and it might take for months, even years and decades. And a shaman is the person who learns how to deal with that energy. So they learn how to deal with the first, like, the symptoms, and then they transform that energy, and they use that energy for community to survive. And we have these 12 skies, as I mentioned before. The upper world contains those 12 skies, and the 12 skies, the highest. So there are certain ranks or hierarchy of the shamanism. And depending on the power of shaman and what they can do, they can go to the skies. Like, there are 6 sky of shamans, the 7 sky of shamans, and then The function of the shaman, usually it's dealing with diseases because we didn't have a doctors.
Right.
And they could heal people without, you know, all of this diagnosable equipment. They can see through. Mm. They can do non-surgical operations. They can heal also venereal disease, alcoholism. And there are shamans who can do certain ceremonies like wedding, funeral, cleansing, land, house. Shamans who are 11 skies, they work with weather conditions. Mm. They can dance with elements. And if there's a dry season, they can call rain.
Call rains.
And the 12 sky shaman, it's the highest, they can connect to extraterrestrials.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's really interesting. I read a lot of books. I heard a lot of stories. And my grandfather was an amazing storyteller and writer and an engineer. So and such a remarkable person. And he always inspired me from his stories about shamans. And I know from my mother also some stories how she witnessed things, or my grandfather. So there are a lot of interesting, very non-explainable stories. When I wanted to bring is Kune, she was shaman who was just a, you know, teenager who was a big fan of Rihanna, Beyoncé. She was born in the city, Yakutsk, which is our capital. She couldn't speak Sakha. But when that moment happened to her, they don't have a choice. They have to accept. Otherwise, it will damage them. So they have to heal people. And then she became a shaman, and her rite of passage was really, really hard on her. Mm. And she worked with government. She worked with detectives. She was very, very helpful. And the reason I say was because she left our world. And it was just in 2015, like modern world, modern time. And the people who went to her ceremonies, whoever, you know, received a healing for her, from her, they described how, you know, she could walk on the ceiling. Like just, you know, doing these unexplainable things. She could turn into animals. Mm. Or if she touches someone, person will experience like a 10 hands on their back. So it's just really, really interesting. I can talk about shamanism for a long time, as you noticed. But yeah, please ask questions. And
yeah, I would I'll love to. So what that evokes for me, so I actually had the honor to, I lived in Sri Lanka, actually, when I was 19. And I had the honor, which I haven't talked much about, but I had the honor to study with a seventh generation healer, mm-hmm. In a very rare esoteric form of Ayurvedic shamanism. Mm-hmm. And the way that he spoke about the world was he talked about the heart rhythm. Mm. And he said that basically health is like the heart's rhythm. And in that culture, traditionally there was no word for privacy and there was no word for possession. So in our kind of Western world where we orient so much towards individuality, in a way, that was the source for much of the dis-ease. So when someone became too imbalanced, what they would do was they would create these elaborate rituals from sunset to sunrise. And they would spend weeks creating these, and now we're talking about the tropics, but you know, they would create these elaborate palm frond cities with flower offerings, and they would put the person who was ill, mm-hmm. or out of balance, not in rhythm, in the middle of the circle. And the entire community would go through this beautiful, ornate ritual orchestration and slowly bring that person back into the heart rhythm, back into the rhythm of the group, because it was their belief that if one person was out of balance, the whole community was out of balance.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And it really, it resonated for me because it came for me out of my own, when I was young, at that age, actually, I also got ill. And in the West, it was called obsessive compulsive disorder, you know? But what I recognized was I was just trying to ritually create, but I was creating out of no tradition, because I didn't grow up in that. And so it was a neurosis. But when I went to Sri Lanka, interestingly enough, I found my own heart rhythm and I rebalanced myself and I left that behind. So I no longer have obsessive compulsive disorder. But I share that to say that I think that we are in the West oftentimes woefully disconnected from so many things, nature being principal among them. But I feel like what you're talking about to me is so evocative because I feel like true shamanism, and this is a whole nother topic we don't need to go into. There's a lot of fake shamans out there, people. Generally speaking, if you're in the West and someone calls himself a shaman, I'm very highly suspect because, like you said, it's not something people oftentimes choose. It's a rite of passage, and it's a very arduous rite of passage. And you're choosing to forsake many of your, you know, this worldly life and all the beauty that that brings to be in service and live between worlds, to be of service to the more, you know? And I think to hear someone like yourself share with such eloquence what true shamanism is so beautiful. How did that inform your life? Because I in my research, I heard that you started studying with this 12th level shaman at, I think, 3 years of age, if I have it correct. And clearly you are communing with the spirit world. You've done deep listening, clearly, with the birds and the spirits, the plants. How does this, because you're almost, I don't want to put words out there that aren't true, but it occurs to me you're like a bridge because you lived in that world, yet you also live in this world and you're living at this time. And you're also blending very beautifully and eloquent traditional instrumentation with now more modern tools that can reach more people. And so in many ways, you're the embodiment of the time and yet bridging this deeply traditional rooted world and also choosing to live in the modern world. And you live in New York City, you know, which is, I imagine, very, very different from 300 person Sakha village in Arctic Siberia. So how did those traditional tools live in you, and how do they, I don't want to make an assumption, but how do you see yourself as a bridge, and how are they evolving in you through modern life?
Well, it was absolutely not an it wasn't an assumption, because I do recognize myself as a bridge.
Yes,
and it bridge more like again, if we speak about the upper world and lower world, two different energies.
Yeah.
Dancing together in the middle world. So I like bridging to opposite energies.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sitting with shaman at age of three. So it's more like a sitting me with nature and learning. So at that age, my grandmother taught me how to sing traditional songs in order to participate in summer solstice ceremonies, shamanic ceremonies. We call that 200,000 people come together for the main celebration. It's near from our capital, Yakutsk. But each county, and we have 36 different counties, and each county has perhaps more than 10 villages.
Wow.
So each villages and perhaps each family who can afford also that celebration, they all do their own.
Wow.
And it's around summer solstice. So it's a massive, massive collective ceremony. And the main one, which is visited by 200,000 people during 2 days, it also became as a festive. And we have a lot of foreigners coming and visiting, national sports games, contest of beauty and talent, contest of the best, how do you call them, blacksmith and
yeah.
crafters and sewers,
yep. like
traditional regalia. It's just a beautiful contest of the singing, traditional storytelling along hall, traditional circle dance, which doesn't end. It doesn't stop during these 2 days.
Wow.
It's a circle dance with the lead singer and everybody else repeats. Hmm. And then the lead singer keeps changing. And then the circle almost never stops. And so that became part of our, you know, celebration of the end of the year. So our new year is during summer solstice.
Wow.
And, you know, it's just basically celebrating that we survived cold winters,
yeah,
cold and long winters. And then we usually get prepared for the next chapter. Mm. And then usually it's all year long of work because, you know, during winter time in November, you prepare a drinking water. So you go out for the lake, on lakes and take the cubes, ice cubes.
Yeah.
And then store it under the ground. Then there's also the ceremonies of preparing meat. So we leave off cows, reindeers, and horses.
Hmm.
So it sounds really crucial that our traditional meal is also horses. But because of these beautiful, powerful animals, we survived.
Mm.
And then they provide transportation, clothing, food. The horse hair, it becomes rock.
Hmm.
And so reindeers for nomadic people, it's even a house. Mm. So they because their settlements are portable. And they follow reindeers. So it's not like our house is like this. We call that yaranga.
Yeah.
And it's yaranga. And it's sort of like a teepee, but it's covered by reindeer leather.
I've been in one in Sweden, something analogous, yes. with the Laplanders.
Sami people.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's my roots. That's my heritage.
I can see it. Yeah, I can see it in you. Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah.
And Midsummer, I still remember to this day, you know, which I didn't have 200,000 people, but that honoring of the solstice and the beauty of that celebration,
mm-hmm.
Which I experienced in Sweden. So profound, you know, to be in that celebration of the essence of like that's the sun, you know, in its strongest point and obviously the longest day. But when you're in the Arctic or when you're that far north, it's like it's light all the time. It's amazing.
Yeah, there's a time and place in Sakha where the sun doesn't just sit. So all the time,
wow.
day, like a sunshine. And then during winter solstice, it's dark.
Wow. So
there's a period of time where it's just disorienting. It's very interesting. And so that's the winter time. And then in a springtime, we prepare our woods for a fire.
Yeah.
chopping wood, bringing it to our yards. Basically, a lot of men work. Mm. Like they work hard, and women, they help them. For example, during the summertime, we cut the grass and prepare it for cows, because cows, they live inside of the house. Mm. There's a cow house. On the contrary, horses, they're half wild. They go to the forest and survive in minus 96. They dig under the snow and eat the grass, and they sleep standing. So wow. They're truly a great companions, and they just basically made us to survive. And it be that beautiful animal sacrifices itself for our survival, and it's a different type of special type of horse. Mm. It's not horses that you see in the Western culture. It's a like short legged, hairy, mm. and very fatty, very very rich by omega-3 and omega-6 in the meat. And there was even time when Japanese people were exporting or importing horse meat to sell it in their pharmacy stores. Yeah. Whoa. So there's this beautiful relationship between animal and human beings, and we basically take care of our food. We give love to that, and it returns back to us. Mm. And the horses, you let them go, and then they come during springtime back with little babies. So they know they're going to be sacrificed, and they're going to, serve us for our survival. It's just, such an honor to see that beautiful relationship between human being and animal. And my grandfather, he always was inviting me for the slaughtering and the birth part. So I saw a lot of death, mm. and I saw a lot of birth of the animals. That's why. And I was participating in just wild, cleansing part, the stomach cleansing, and our traditional meal is also stomach.
Yeah.
Blood, sausages, and it gets really, really wild. All raw, like raw liver, raw fish, even raw meat. It's our traditional meal. And me living here in Western culture, there is no necessity to hunt or to eat meat for me. Mm. On the contrary, when I eat meat, red meat, I feel very heavy. Mm. So I think it all depends on environment. Depends where your body lives most of the time, so you bring those elements to yourself. And our elders, they can survive. They can live after 100. So it's like their longevity.
Yeah, longevity.
Longevity of life. It's remarkable. Even we think that being vegetarian, it's healthy, but I think it's the food wise, it's actually according to the environment.
Mm.
The food should have the elements to survive there. And even our, the two generations before me, they were eating meat and milk, all this animal-based food. My grandfather's siblings and a lot of that generation, they passed their hundreds. My generation is now, we're already,
Well, I think also, worthy to mention, right? Because if you're growing if you're in the Arctic, you're not growing, grow plants, right?
No, it's fruits. Like
you're deep in the ice, And so that, that meat source would be so essential for sustenance. But it's so powerful that you say that they've lived to past 100, because there's an interesting author named Dan Buettner, And he researched these communities. He called them the Blue Zones, which are the places around the world where people live the longest. The centenarians, people like your ancestors who are living over 100. And it was wild, because the part that struck me was, in addition to eating a more natural diet, and that diet looked different depending on where in the world they were, right? Like Okinawa, I think there's a part in Japan. There's even a community here, actually here in California, where people have a high concentration of centenarians. But one of the most central determining factors was the quality of the community, like how also closely tied that community is. And so when we talk about a bridge between traditional and modern living, you know, like I just looked at research and, you know, over 60% of Americans now identify as lonely, you know, and most places around the world, it's like 30 to 50%. So I feel like we're moving from a traditional culture to a modern culture, and that affords and brings many benefits, but also, like, I think there's so much wisdom to be garnered from these traditional cultures, like the culture that you're, you know, keeping, you know, you are a living representation of. And I imagine when you talk about 200,000 people coming together for the summer, that community must have been very strong.
Yeah. So living there and coming to the big city, of course, it's just big, big, big difference. But I can see wherever I go, I'm at my home. So it's Earth.
Yes.
And
beautifully said.
And serving this mission, what I've chosen, like I agreed to, I accepted that choice. It's a path. It's a very musical path. And I know the realm that I serve. And you mentioned that, you know, before that I sat with shamans. So this Save shaman that I honored to meet him, he, in his ceremony, he connected to the spirits and gave me a permission to play a drum. Because in my culture, we don't play drum without permission of the spirits. We don't sound boom, 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 without reason. And so my drum was made from reindeer leather, and it had nine horns sticking out. And I had that drum, but I was afraid to play. And then when Save said they gave you a passage, the green light, I started to just improvise. I just all of a sudden had my wings spread really wide. And, you know, lately I see how it is important for us as a human beings to express ourselves and to communicate, to connect to the, not only to the spirits, but also to higher world energies. And in my case, those are deities. So each sky in my culture has a deity. And every single time when I improvise, when I freely express myself with the sound, with the gift that we have, so human voice, as a singing or even, you know, weird sounds, it's just takes me to somewhere else, not in this human body. Yeah. So my soul travels. And in that state, I can download some data, a lot of, you know, information. And I guess it just alters me. And the power of sound just, that's what I am using.
Yes.
And I'm specifically, you know, serving the realm where the sound resides, and I have students. I have five courses: Your Unique Voice, Mimicking Birds and Animal Sounds, Reindeer Breath, Arctic Beatbox, Mouth Harp, and Northern Dances.
Beautiful.
So through those tools, I witnessed how people just express themselves freely. And then I can see transformation in them. It helps them a lot to go through their fear, because quite often we have a lot of oppression and blockages here. We speak, even you can feel it in the speech, because in order to be able to sing, you connect all of these three worlds within you. So we believe that these three worlds here and also outside. So the lower world, the root chakra, it's primal survival, very sexual passion energy. And then it's like an engine. Without that engine, we can't create our middle world.
Right.
And then you learn how to elevate that energy and sort of express yourself through the heart, the love, tapdal energy. So everything that we create in this middle world, it should be out of love. Then we, you know, can remain in balance. Quite often we misuse that powerful root chakra energy and we act out of anger. So that's nothing wrong about that. It's just, you know, it sits deep down in our DNA, because our ancient ancestors, they were all hunters, and there might be some predators, you know, attacking them. So you are ready to run away or attack back. Right. So we have that adrenaline rush. And then living in civilized world, we just also learn how to elevate that energy and transform it into even to the gratitude, to the Mahtal area, higher world area. And that's where we receive enlightenment and awakening. So all of these three parts of our bodies when you sing. So this is breath. You breathe out of your belly. And in Sakha singing, we have this kaliha. You heard that, you know,
yes.
Overtone. It's like a groove. And so the breath, it's a chest when we speak, or we, you know, sound. It comes from chest. And then on top of that, this falsetto, right? Like a yodeling. And then I see it as all three worlds are connected and balanced. And then so you can feel how the energy flows through all of these three worlds that are inside of you. And so I've just served that realm. I think sound, it's just a beautiful healing. It's a medicine. It's a medicine that goes along with other medicines, like a gift of Mother Earth. And other shamanic cultures have these plant medicines. And that's why shamans, they always, you know, they have sound, they have shakers, they do, you know, these chantings. There's always a sound. And what sound does, it doesn't have obstacles. It can travel through many realms, and it comes from heart to heart.
Yes.
So that's the realm that I serve.
First of all, that was just so beautifully eloquent, and it evoked so much in me, because I'm feeling called to my soul, and right now I'm writing a book about the music that wants to live in the space between people, and it's all about the music of relationship. And for me, I literally just read this the other day, but I think it was Beethoven said that music is a higher revelation than any wisdom, you know? And to me, when you talk about shamanism, you know, I've had the incredible, incredible opportunity to sit with some absolutely profound, true, like paje and pajes, curanderos, even I got the honor to go on Men's Business with an Aboriginal elder in Australia at Uluru, which didn't involve any plant medicine, but it was to be amidst these cultures, you know what I mean? And to, you know, when on Men's Business, when this man shared stories by the fire, he wasn't talking about something that happened. he was speaking and the world around me was changing. It was like his music was evoking, you know? And I see that as well in the chants of you know, these indigenous elders, for example, from the Amazon. You know, they're chanting and it's carrying the song. The song carries you and it brings you back home, you know?
That's what I wanted to mention, the power of sound.
Yes.
It's just one thing is you can visit other realms. You can go really far away. But the question is, how are you going to come back to your physical body? And the sound, it just takes you back and provides for you a safe path, passage. And that's why shamans, they all do sounds. And it's some kind of, when you're far away, you can hear it and you follow the sound.
Yeah.
And come back. And we also believe that if person is too far away, they might not even come back. Mm-hmm. And there were some situations mm-hmm. where people couldn't come back. And the sound is just, there's one thing about song of each person. I think healing should be decentralized. This is the time when, as a collective, as a humanity, we need to wake up and then start realizing that the best healer and teacher is us. For us, it's ourselves. Mm. Because in the ancient time, you know, there are curanderos, medicine people, gurus, seers, shamans, and only they are able to connect to the different realms and provide the information to people. And there's like a one saying as a contact high. So people, by seeing the shamans trance, and being also embraced by the sound and led by the sound, they can visit together all as a collective those realms that shaman visits. But I think humanity, especially the Western society, went to the point when we're not able to do that anymore. Or some few of us can do that. That's why you know, there are also these gifts of the nature. They are coming into our lives and they're helping these people to believe in magic. And there should happen some paradigm shift, and it should happen also as a collective, like all together.
Yes.
Not only one people leading, you know, other people, the rest of this. We should do it from inside. And here is singing is such a powerful altering tool. So when you just hum to yourself, you literally can feel that vibration that has been born from you and resonating from your scalp, from your skeleton, from your bones, sending back to you. You know how cats, they purr?
Yeah.
And then you can see how they are in this meditative state. And I even heard that they can come if a human has some pain, they can sit on that spot and purr and they will heal. So the cat is well known for fast recovering animal creature. And it's literally as a sound healing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then, you know, just sounding to yourself and being able to improvise where, while you're sounding, you're also connecting to the higher realms or to the middle world realms, like with the spirits. It's just, I find it really powerful, natural human skill.
Yes.
To heal,
and yes,
to wake up, be awakened, and also
And it's available to everybody.
Exactly.
You know, like it's totally, it's ubiquitous. Everyone has that ability. Everyone has the equal ability, you know? Unfortunately, I think a lot of people, including myself, have suppressed their voice, you know? And it's like, but yet it's like you said, it's the medicine that lives within all of us.
Yeah.
You know? And I love that you're talking about, in a way, music is your medicine. At least that's how I'm hearing it. Because, and it can be everyone's medicine. It's like universally available, like for us to learn to unleash our voice, to unleash mm-hmm. our song and find the, you know, the resonance, find those notes and find also, I think the places that carry our song, the people that carry our song, right? Because, you know, it's like a symphony, you know, like, a solo is profoundly beautiful when someone's in their song, you know?
Yeah.
And yet also people can syncopate, you know, they can come into balance and their songs can play beautifully together. And there's like also medicine in that. It's incredible.
Yeah. Look at this whole world. It's a vibration, right?
Yes.
And the vibration creates rhythm. And tapping into rhythm of certain realms, or the realm that we visit, in a transcendental state, even during the daytime, we shift our world. When we're angry, all of a sudden your environment different, right?
Yeah.
Or you are happy or joyful. It's all completely different. So we kind of microdosing on shifting our reality,
sure.
even without noticing it.
Yeah.
And each realm has own rhythm. And according to that, our rhythm in the body, like a biorhythm, also changes. And some of them damageable, dissonance, you know, it's also the way we do relationships. Sometimes you either like energy of person or dislike. It's like a whole body reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes like an intuition, boom.
Yep.
It bypasses your mind. And it's like a song, music. When you hear a song, you instantly have this reaction,
yes.
first impression. And then after that, your mind tries to explain why you dislike it or you liked it. So this magic of sound is just like everywhere, and creating your own song. So there's, I see it in the two different manifestations. First is like creating sort of just the sound,
yeah.
which is very primal, like even before human language was created, it was just a sound. And that's how our ancestors were yeah. communicating, because they learned from the nature. They could hear the birds or animals, how they were doing. And then when you listen to birds' sounds, it's just, they have such a sophisticated different rhythms and melodies. It's like a jazz. And, and then person, you know, has, I believe that every single person has own song, own melody, own tone, beautiful, unique voice timbre, color of voice. And the second manifestation of song for me, it's weaving your poetry, your self-expression. It was how, you know, Saha people, my ancestors were constantly creating songs as an improvisation, as a self-expression. For example, this alas that I described before.
Yeah.
These open spaces, they have far distances from each other. And in order to visit your neighbor, it might take you 2-3 days on horse or on bull.
Wow.
It's a vast area. And what the horse rider would do, just tapping into rhythm of the horse, right? And sing a song. And that song, it's a improvisation with improvised lyrics. And it's like a pure channeling. And they would describe an environment. And then what is interesting, I'm from northeast part of Saha, which we have like a hills, and our toyuk, which is traditional songs, They have more like ups and downs. So it has a lot of melodies, ups and downs. On the contrary, people from west side of Saha, they have so it's like a more 2-3 only notes, and it would represent where you come from.
Wow.
So people could recognize, oh, so you have this melody, you are from northeast. So it's like a horse rider would kind of tune with the landscape of the environment.
Wow.
Isn't it crazy? I just, you know, me being in the city is actually my love and my interest, my passion towards my culture just grows every single day because I miss my home. I'm homesick.
Yes.
My mother and three sisters still live there.
Wow.
And I can see how Saha people are so, you know, they're so humble, so shy, and they're holding everything inside and very powerful. And I just, I can sometimes do this and go, wow, you know, how it is precious. And when you're far away, you want to sing about that. So yeah. I write songs.
Beautiful.
And even in English. So
okay.
Saha and in English. These days I'm trying also some mainstream songs.
Yes.
So there are some interesting motifs. And
Any of them published yet or not yet?
Not yet. Not yet. I'm working.
That's what you were working on earlier today, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm becoming a songwriter an indigenous female music producer. So I love this working with Ableton Live and looping myself, dropping the beat, like heavy bass or house beats. It could be anything, but I am coming up with Arctic beats, my own cultural, you know, beats, the rhythm of my homeland, this far North Pole rhythms inserted into EDM.
Yeah.
And I'm doing it live so I can DJ, put the effects on. It's a complicated, but I have such a, you know, curiosity how I can combine traditional songs and songs of my ancestors.
Yes.
With electronic music. So it's a different format. It's different than the mainstream songs, but it's for the festivals. And it has also an amazing components. I would like to do some interactions with people. And I've done it many times, like people sing along with me.
Call and response.
Yeah, call and response.
Yeah.
Dancing together. I can
yes.
briefly teach them. So it has a lot of interesting formats within the set. And that's what I'm, you know, preparing these days, and also some medicine album, like the medicine songs.
I love it because it's the variety. You know, it's interesting when you were singing so beautifully of these different regions, you know, the Northwest and the Northeast and Southwest. It reminded me, and it was going to sound very strange, but because you just mentioned everything you mentioned, I was like, wow, I grew up with 90s hip hop. And I thought about, you know, like the hip hop from the South is like very distinct. Mm. And you got like New York, you know, where I lived for a long time. And you got like, you know, Tribe Called Quest, but then you got West Coast and you got Snoop and you got like, it's very, all of them also have very different sounds. And it's interesting because then I was thinking about traditional music and, you know, a lot of times actually when you talk about, and I love that you said like indigenous woman music producer, because it's so important. And like I went to the, you know, I actually during Standing Rock went out on a bus with veterans. I just ran into one of the gentlemen, indigenous veteran that I went with, and it was so powerful because it was this moment of resistance. I haven't really shared much about it. It was so deep, but it was when, you know, they were fighting for their waters. Uh-huh. You know. But like also the music, a lot of the music coming out of the res is also hip hop, you know? So, but then when they also blended with their traditional like powwow mm-hmm. songs, and it's so powerful. And And unfortunately, which I hope there becomes more attention, you know, there's like also a tragedy happening across many of the indigenous communities with women and women disappearing, you know. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that you are a loud voice bridging traditional and modern and also so powerful and eloquent, it's just like medicine for my soul to hear that, because I think it's so beautiful and also so needed. Mm. So I honor you for doing that work.
Thank you, Martel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to be honoring of your time. And I know you've been in the studio all day, and we're going to do a little bit tomorrow as well. Mm-hmm. What are the places that people, because you're creating a bunch, you mentioned, for example, you have various courses, and I want to tap into that myself to liberate the voice. You mentioned you're producing music. Obviously, you have a tremendous treasure trove of information as it relates to traditional culture. Where can people find you?
So you are just reading my mind. I just wanted to introduce the project that I'm working
on. Please.
These days. I came up with an idea to create Olux app. Hmm. It's an app that contains all of this.
Okay.
Beautiful. So, first of all, it's...
And what does Olux mean? I actually know, but share for the audience.
Olux with X in the end, yeah. in Sakha or in Cyrillic, it's a K. We call it K and it become Olux. So Olux became Olux because I wanted to infuse some creativity as it goes through me. Mm. But Olux means the life. Mm. And... look at that app as a social media for a conscious community or people who would like to grow spiritually, personally. And so the main tool that we're, the main gift that we are creating is streaming platform where the songs are going to be created by people. And put out there. First of all, it's going to be 360. Mm. So I'm going to put my medicine songs there. Mm. And those are for different occasions of life, or moods, music that supports you along with your mood for sleeping, for meditation, for traffic jam, for hiking, for hanging out, for focus. There are all of this music right now on YouTube, or you can find it somewhere. But I would like to put my songs there, my special medicine music there. And so that's a streaming, number one. Number two, we're giving a platform, we're giving a tool, creative tool for people to record themselves, to create their sounds. So it's basically what I'm working on Ableton, but user-friendly, very simple version of that on the app. And then number three, it's very important part, which is an educational part. So we're going to invite an indigenous influencers who would like to share their songs, singing techniques, playing instrument and dances, like online courses. So I'm creating special templates. It's very simple, very dynamic. And then you have these three elements. And then the fourth element, it's a market. So you can create your sounds and go public or keep it for yourself. And those four elements are connected because I do see bridging. And I see how it is important to learn first, right? And then when people learn, they want to express, so they want to create. So there's a creative tool. And then after that, you can put your music, your songs in the market. You can sell or buy. And you can even create your song and put it in the streaming. So it's all connected. And for me, the biggest, the most effective transformation is when you hear yourself or when you see yourself. and recording part, it's very, very important, or taking notes after your imagine, after your some journeys. Mm. You have a lot of ideas and you would like to document it. And then all of a sudden that app becomes your pocket sort of assistant or best friend, mm-hmm. for like a spiritual friend. Mm. This is, and then it's actually you, your library, but it's also having access to a brighter audience if you want to go public, because some people want to share what they created. And yeah, so it's been a very interesting journey. I have my team. We're going to We're going to do crowdfunding.
Okay, beautiful.
Yeah, very soon. We've created the whole pitch, and I hope, you know, if people are interested and if they believe that we can all create something together, something like that, very beautiful. I just want to serve. I want to give something to people, not only selling merchandise, you know, when you have these millions of followers in social media, which I have now, organically grown. And I just don't want to sell there just the merchandising or something, which a lot of influencers do. I want to give something very useful for people. And my online courses, because I have to sit there and be there, and it takes a lot of time. Mm. And for me, there's a high demand on courses and just giving first beginners, intermediate, and advanced series on that app. I'm going to be the first influencer there. And so that will help me to understand, is this person, you know, went through advanced or just a beginner? So I can invite these people for my in-person workshops. Mm. And my main idea is to create a collective in-person circles, or like a gatherings.
Beautiful.
And it has sort of gamification within it. And who knows, maybe it will turn into a beautiful community that I'm dreaming. We'll see. It's just a lot of visions and a lot of people who would like to support. I have team. And so I'm very, very excited about this journey.
Excellent. Well, we'll link to it below in the show notes. And very exciting to hear about your collaborative spaces that you're creating. And I think I really love the way that you speak about the medicine of the voice. And I think it's so potent for people to come to express their music, you know, and their song. So I'm grateful you're providing a forum for people to do so.
Yeah.
And thank you so much, Snow Raven, for making the time to be here and sharing your stories with me.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure talking to you. Very easy. And, you know, this, when you said music over a relationship.
Yes.
So I do feel, what if our life with ups and downs is like a huge wave, and it's like a sound, like a giant sound. And we are just a small fraction of the huge song that is the universe.
Yes.
And so for me, seeing everything as a dance or music, it's way holistic rather than just fight or competition or duality, you know. It's just a very poetic way for me. Who knows? Maybe it is like that. But I can imagine.
Well, it evokes for me two things I want to share with you. One is I just heard the Hubble telescope. They just released the sound of a black hole, and it makes sound.
Wow!
And so I think consciousness, the universe, for me, consciousness is, I mean, this is, it's like the universe seeking to wake up to itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the song is wanting to emerge in all of us. You mm-hmm. know, we are all part of that consciousness, part of that universe. And the second thing that it evokes, which is related, is I just learned that the oldest that we know living culture on our planet is the culture of the whales. And the whales sing.
Mm-hmm.
And they sing, just as you mentioned with the Saka people, they sing a song that is endemic to the place that they're from. And it's their medicine. But they carry it. And the next whale sings the song that is the message from the previous whale, but adds to it their own mm-hmm. distinct element of the song, which is also endemic to where they're from.
Mm-hmm.
And around the world, whales are carrying culture through song as we speak. And to me, just learning that was like medicine for my heart. It was very beautiful to think about. Like you said in the very beginning, to bring it kind of full circle, you know, what we hear, what we see is such a limited aspect of what truly is,
mm-hmm.
you know. But I think music reminds us of the more that is always there.
Beautiful set. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for being with us. And we're going to close with a beautiful... yes, please. This is incredible. And explain a little bit about what this is.
Yeah, so this is hummus.
Hummus.
Hummus. In English, you perhaps heard about mouth harp, jaw harp, chew harp, or juice harp.
Mm.
And this little instrument, very portable, you can... wear it as a necklace.
Mm.
This exists around the world. A lot of ethnicities, different cultures have own mouth harps and made from material of their environment.
Mm.
It can be made from bones, from bamboo. Ours is made from iron. And it truly has a beautiful, clear sound. So it's all made in Saha, in my homeland, by indigenous blacksmiths. And I would like to... share with you a song, or I would say more like a composition, improvisational piece called The Birth of the Universe.
Yes, please. Mm. Yeah.
And there you have it. I hope you enjoyed this incredible episode with Snow Raven. Please, if you loved it, share it with a friend you think would appreciate it. Please go ahead and leave us a rating and review over on Apple Podcasts or leave a rating over on Spotify. It means the world to me and helps me get more incredible guests for you guys. I'm so grateful for your energy, for your efforts, for your listening. I never take it for granted. I'm sending you so much love, and we have some incredible guests coming up. Can't wait for you to listen. Until then, be well, my friends.